Katie Barr, host of Alpha Beta Launch, a FinTech Founder Stories series. And today we are joined by Jeff Spencer, CEO and founder of Playfora. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
I'm so excited that you could take the time. I know you're a busy guy. You've got a lot going on. We're just so jazzed to hear about what you're doing and your company. And I just want to hear a little bit about who you guys are.
We can be a lot of different things, right? I think every startup company probably has a little bit of that in them. But ultimately, we like to think of ourselves as the first multi-purpose consumer escrow tool. And really, it's built for peer groups. And what we've done is we've attached a listing of nonprofits, actually 1.6 million through some other APIs and things like that. And that gives people the opportunity to fundraise by taking a portion of the entry fee or the cost from different events, contests, and sales items that people already like and enjoy participating in. And it creates this non-invasive way of fundraising where you're essentially squeezing charitable giving into the things that people already love instead of putting out your hand and asking for donations. Just makes it a little bit easier process. And ultimately we're the collector of money. We collect and hold and help you reallocate it. And there's a lot of internal things that go underneath the hood that drive that.
You know, it can be so awkward reaching out and asking for money and, hey, can you support my kid's fundraiser or
right.
Scout cookies? So it seems like you guys are trying to streamline that process and make it just a little bit more user-friendly.
And I'll kind of just jump into the story here. But
yeah, you know, the inception, that's what we all want to hear.
Sure. So I originally started this because I was working with nonprofits as a technology consultant. And I got to see their struggles. And it wasn't just about, you know, going out and being asked to donate and stuff. It's the people that are asking for donations that need the help in that world. And you could see that that's a very difficult thing for them to do. It's the ultimate sales pitch, right? You're having to go out and try to solicit people to give you donations, but you're not giving much in return except for an experience. And I saw their struggles with that. And I knew through different other, you know, through For a Cause type of events out there that was something that needed to be automated so that more people would go out and do it to make it a lot easier for those nonprofits to receive funds, you know, and basically put it back on the individuals instead of, you know, having the nonprofits themselves sit back and worry about where their next dollar is coming from.
So Jeff, I have to ask, we're talking about kind of the alpha, the early stages of the inception of your company. I heard there was a little bit of like a March Madness, something or other that was the trigger here for that. You gotta tell me, what was it specifically? I mean, obviously necessity is the mother of invention. So you found the need somewhere along the lines, but it had to do with March Madness. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my wife is the most charitable, one of the most charitable people I know. She runs my kids' school's PTA, or she was the PTA president for 2 years in a row. And they were coming up with new and creative ways to raise money for this my kids' PTA, right? I would run a March Madness contest, and we'd do a 50-50 where the school would get 50%, and then we'd use 50% as prizes. However, that got rejected, right? Like, of course. And I should have known that when I was offering to do that. But my thought after that, though, was, you know, what if I just did that on my own with my friends and whoever else wanted to participate, and then took that donation and gave it to the school? You know, and that's really that was the trigger point for Playfora. That was how the idea generated. Now, there are so many rules and regulations that go along with that, you know, you don't realize, you find out later. But that, I think that was definitely the trigger point with the other influences of where I've worked and things like that. So
I mean, so much behind the scenes goes into something like this. I mean, there's so much love and work, and I mean, it's blood, sweat, and tears. I want to know about the early stages of all of this. I mean, you've talked about the thought process and how it all began, but what were those initial launch points when you were just trying to get things started for yourself as an entrepreneur? What were the stages and steps that you took?
Yeah, and I think my story is probably a little bit different than anybody else's, because I'm, you know, I'm a first-time founder at the age of 36, and the industry itself, you see, is full of people coming right out of college, or you know, you've heard the stories about the college dropout creating something and going from there with it, and it's almost looked negatively upon to a degree, you know.
Oh, you're making me feel old now, Jeff.
Well, in the entrepreneur world, you know. 36 is pretty old.
So you're kind of showing, even just by your own personal experiences, that really age is not something that's going to define or limit
no.
you.
No, it's not. And it's a funny thing getting into it, right? Like the early stages for me were extremely exciting. And you start studying and learning what's going on and figuring out how to be an entrepreneur. What are the steps that you need to take? And it seems like it's a play by, you know, it's a draw by lines kind of thing where you go out, you test your idea, then you go and you know, build something, but you don't really learn how you get to build something, or you don't know how to test. So then you have to learn about how to test. And it's a lot of little things, but it's an exciting time because you think it's an easy formula. And you don't really figure that out until later on through the mistakes that you've made and looking back at the different, you know, the different paths and avenues that you took when building the product and what led to where you are now, you know. So the early stages were funny. I didn't even tell any of my friends about it. I did it a little differently. I did user testing outside of my friends and family. Well, outside my friends, I went to my family a little bit and kind of bounced ideas off of them, but you know, I wanted to keep it in wraps because it's you're really nothing until you have something out there, right? It's an idea until something launches, and we still haven't launched, but we're very close. So I think I can almost count it at this point.
So there's this saying, be scared and do it anyways. It's kind of like, would you say that's like the motto for most entrepreneurs, from the idea stage to getting into that beta stage, as far as just take the jump?
Yeah. Now, I was listening to a podcast. It was about a year ago at the same time. And Mark Cuban gets on and he's answering essentially the same question. Like, what advice do you have or whatever? And he said, just start. It doesn't matter where you go, just start and go. And I took that advice and I started creating things little by little and ultimately have all led up to this point.
I think a lot of it is, I don't know what I'm doing. And it seems like part of this maybe is just, you just figure it out as you go. And as things change, as they come up, you make those necessary pivots. Would you say that's a correct assessment?
Oh yeah. And it's even more minute than that. I mean, you figure it out and then you got to learn the way to fix it and then recreate it and pivot it in a different way. And, you know, there's so many different hurdles that you have to jump over and you just have no idea. You think something's an easy idea, but getting it to a point it's been difficult.
So are you in the beta stages right now, Jeff? I know that you haven't launched officially yet, but you're getting ready. You're getting close. Are you in that that beta stage? Is that fairly accurate to say?
I mean, we're doing testing and stuff like that all the time. We're building on Android and iOS markets, and then we're going to have a web app as well. Okay. So we went all in. We skipped. I mean, we have prototypes and stuff like that, but we skipped the base MVP, which is what most people tell you to do. Go MVP and then figure it out after that. Raise money. Well, we're going all in. We're bootstrapping this thing ourselves, and we're paying for a bunch of help. And we both believe in the idea so much. But yeah, we're in the beta stages. We have, you know, we're a consumer product, so we don't technically have customers. We have contracts, marketing contracts with some of the largest charities in the United States, like the United Way and water.org right now, where they've agreed to market us in exchange for being a feature listing on our app. So, you know, that's a part of the testing stage to a degree as well, right? It's getting those kind of people on board or organizations on board that will support you and help make you what you can ultimately become.
What was that initial pitch like when you went to them and you had this product and it wasn't totally complete with Inception yet? What did you take as far as prototype, if you will, because you said you didn't have one. What did you take to sell them on your idea?
I had a prototype. I didn't have an MVP. I didn't have anything that was actually out where, you know, money was exchanging hands, but I had enough to show them. And I had that. I went out and had that built on my own before I even had a technical co-founder. And the pitch now is completely different than the early stage pitch. It was the early stage pitch was, let me introduce you to certain markets that you don't, that there's currently not much philanthropy involved in, and I can give you access to those kind of thing. Let me show you what I have. And I would show them the prototype and go through, the different features and how it would benefit them and what, you know, what it will look like if you get this out to all of your customers and things like that and let them know about it. Because we did, I also did user testing as far as, I did a 1500 person survey and figured out certain things along the ways of, you know, what's my chances of getting somebody that already plays something like fantasy football to use Playfora as a means of collection, right? So I had a lot of that data that I would give to them.
You guys are so based on like fundraising for other companies, but like, what about your company, Jeff? I mean, is there like some angel donor, or is this literally you are pulling the dollars out of your pocket to fund this in the early stages? You know, who's making this happen financially for you?
Yeah, so that's a funny way of putting it, right? We're a fundraising platform to a degree, right? And people can fundraise for themselves even on our one stipulations that you got to give at least 1% to nonprofit. But that was my mentality going into this: develop an idea, try to get fundraising for it, and then I met my co-founder, my technical co-founder that's helping to build it and everything. He had an exit with another company. That back in March, this past March. So his advice and what he liked, and he's the one that really sold it on to me, it was, let's keep our equity in-house as much as we can until we absolutely need to go out and fundraise.
Yeah.
And he was willing to put in so much. I mean, he put in a lot, and I've matched him. So we're bootstrapping this by ourselves right now. I did borrow $15,000 early on from friends and family. But besides that, everything else has come from me and him. And we want to get to launch and have that traction be in the form of, you know, customers before we go to any venture capitalists or angels out there. So
this is a kind of a weird question to ask, but I think it's an important one because I think that there are so many other people, Jeff, that are like you, that are starting with this idea and trying to figure out a way to make it work. So my question is, and if you're willing to be vulnerable here and share, is along this way, what were the pitfalls? Any mistakes that you had personally that you're just like, why did we do that? Like, and you gotta be honest with me, because I guarantee there's so many other people like you that are wanting to learn from other people's mistakes and trying to figure out the right way to do things. Not that there is any one right way to do things.
Well, I think that's part of it. Like, I don't know if there is a right way to do anything. You see the formulas out there for what makes a successful company and what makes a successful startup, and it's team and traction and blah blah blah. And I don't think a mistake is ultimately a learning lesson in this. One of the things was, I went out and built a very expensive prototype for a consumer app, you know, and the company that I was dealing with and the company that helped me build it, I think they deal more with a SaaS market, business to business kind of thing, where a prototype will really go and get you, you know, traction. You can get people to commit with a prototype. Well, a prototype doesn't do much for consumer base, right? So that was one of my biggest mistakes, was going down that path and then thinking I could fundraise based off of a prototype. And the biggest mistake was not trying to find a co-founder earlier, because the work that you have to put into this is so much, and it's impossible for just one person to do. So,
Who was your first hire then, Jeff? I mean, you had you on board, and then you made that initial hire. I mean, at some point you had to go to your friends and be like, so here's what I'm doing. What was their response, and how did you get your first employee on board?
Yeah, so their response was, it's kind of what I thought. They thought it was a very cool idea. They were actually impressed that I didn't tell them for so long, and then that I had something that I could show them when I did have the prototype. As far as the first hire, we're a team of seven. Everybody on the team is either a designer or a developer at this point. But I would call my first hire my co-founder. You know, it was not necessarily a hire, but I was, once again, 36-year-old, first-time founder, trying to get people to help me build this idea that I had. And the guy that I'm in the meeting with, his name is Misha Patel. Awesome. He went through Techstars, had an exit with his last company, and you know, he's a rock star. I soon found myself in a conversation with him. And instead of me thinking like, what can this guy do for me? It's like, how the hell am I going to get this guy on board and sell him on this idea and get him to partner with me, because this is exactly what I need.
Yeah.
He bought in right away. We had two meetings, and he was like, I love this idea. The market opportunity is great. It's something just completely different than anything else out there. It's a different kind of way of fundraising. And he fell in love with it very early on. And it was a pretty easy thing for him. It also helps that he's kind of in the same stage. He's 36 as well, has kids. And, you know, so we have, and the funny, other funny thing is he worked for the same company. He spent the majority of his career at a company that I've spent the majority of my career at as well, and that I'm still currently involved with. So
yeah, we're going to talk later about you knocking age, Jeff, because I'm starting to feel a little old over here, but basically we're establishing that any age is a good starting age launching an idea. You mentioned a market, and I wanted to ask you about what your target market was. Who is your target audience moving forward?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, looking on the outside, most people would say, well, you just need to link up with charitable individuals, charitable people, right? And that's definitely a factor of it. But what Playfora is I think it's more of that in-between person, the person that doesn't necessarily want that. They like to be charitable, but yet they've worked hard for their money. They don't necessarily want to open their wallet and just hand something over, because a lot of times it feels like it's hurting you more than it's helping the people that you're giving the money to, right? Like a $20 donation here and there is not going to change the world in a lot of people's eyes. And I think that's the type of person that we not necessarily are trying to target, but that we're built for, right? We make it easier for those types of people to give, because we're incorporating charitable giving into things that they already like doing, right? So if it's a fantasy football, or I mean, it could even be like a neighborhood barbecue or something like that, where the proceeds are going to water.org or United Way or Innocence Projects or something like that, and it's based off the profits. You know, it's just a chance to incorporate charitable giving to those types of things. And that opens the door for a lot of people that don't typically donate. The fantasy sports community is going to be a big one for us, because that's an easy thing to do. We not only do we help them collect, but give a little bit to charity at the same time. It's at a very, very low cost. It's kind of
win-win.
A win-win. Yeah.
So do you see your app working as a group of people are together? Maybe we're watching March Madness, maybe we're watching football, we're talking fantasy, and the app works in a sense where someone, you're talking to your buddies and you're wanting to bet money, but then have it be able to go to charity. You can download this app and be able to make a donation and then make that exchange that way. Is that correct?
Somewhat, you know, in a group setting, take a fantasy football group, for example, where you have 12 of your buddies that are getting together. Normally it's a $50 to a $100 entry. Yeah. Somebody is responsible for holding that money typically. Yeah. And it's a headache of a job. I'm actually, I run a fantasy football league myself.
Are you the commissioner?
I am the commissioner, and I still have people. The season's already over that have not paid yet, right?
Oh.
So So we're that in between where everybody would sign up and use Play4 and the money would go there, and Play4 is holding the money and is responsible for that, you know, instead of one person being responsible for the money and having to send it all out at the end of the season. The whole process is done with just a couple of clicks. Like, you send it out, send a link out, people pay into it. We hold the money until the commissioner decides it's time to release the money. And as long as you're giving at least 1% to a nonprofit, Play4 is the right way for you, because it not only makes it easy, but like I said, you add that extra element of purpose into what you're doing.
I've read a little bit about your company online, and I've done some research into you and your co-founder and your tech support. But what I'm wondering is, for people that are not familiar with who you guys are and what you guys do, how would you differentiate Play4a to other apps like money sharing apps like Zelle, or will you bring in that that nonprofit side like GoFundMe for the people that right. are like, wait, this sounds kind of like this, but what are the differences?
Yeah, so I mean, and we're right in the middle of those two, right? We Cash App, Venmo, PayPal, if you're using those, and that's essentially what we're replacing in these groups is that kind of feel. Well, that's a multi-step process. Right. A commissioner is getting 12 different payments from 12 different people, having to hold them. And he or she is responsible for holding that money and safeguarding it until it's time to redistribute. And if anything happens, then they're kind of on the hook for it. Right. So we eliminate that responsibility on them. We make it a lot easier for them to collect. And then when it's time to release the money, it's done with just a couple of clicks. So in that aspect, we are, instead of being a multi-point, you know, transactional kind of feel, we're a single point. It's really just a couple clicks and you're done. On the other fundraising side of things, you know, the GoFundMes and Facebook causes and stuff like that, we're incorporating other outside elements in, right? We've all seen the classic Facebook causes, GoFundMe, you know, type of fundraiser, you know, and nobody gets excited for that. You do it because they'd appreciate the person that is doing it.
I'm just excited for an opportunity for the commissioner to not be the bad guy, because I gotta say there's a lot of uncomfortable days with the boyfriend where they're like, having a bad day, having to deal with everyone, having to shell out all the money, and you're eliminating that headache. So in advance, I would just say thank you on behalf of so many wives everywhere.
There you go.
I want to know, Jeff, what was your experience like working with Scylla? How have they been able to help you guys as you are entering in this launch phase here just before that initial get-go?
Yeah, and Scylla's been great. One, their customer support is the best. And they're there 24/7 for you. There are so many different banking regulations and industry hurdles that you have to get over, that it's near impossible to create a fintech or a near fintech type of application or product out there, just because the banks ultimately are, there's a lot of blockers out there.
Yeah.
Scylla was able to help us get around those things, like money transmitter licenses and different KYC checks and things like that they take all of that off of our plate, so we don't have to create anything to go along with it. They're kind of the one-stop shop, and they're very inexpensive at doing it too. So they made it so easy for us to take the next steps for what we needed to do.
Can you give me some examples, like a specific thing that Scylla did that has helped you to kind of take it to that next step, that next sort of chapter of your guys' story? Any specific examples that you can give?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with that money transmitter license, and that's what kind of made us reach out to Scylla in the first place and look for a secondary type of solution, because they already have the relationship with the banks. And that was a hurdle that really stopped us in our track, because once you start researching that kind of stuff, it's money transmitter licenses was going to cost us over $1 million.
Wow.
To establish in every single state. You know, we're bootstrapping this, right? I don't have $1 million to put up. So that, and you're talking about years of off the timeline. Well, Scylla already has that in place. So they've taken that hurdle completely off of our, off of our plate and have allowed us to I guess piggyback off of their relationships that they have with the bank and get us past that. Not product wise, they're designed to have transfers through, you know, cryptocurrency that and digital wallets, that it's just what they do is just so easy. They have it already drawn out. It's a simple API that we were able to put into place, and you're able to transfer money from point A to point B, and that's without doing much.
Yeah, so much of this has to do with money, and we're talking about, you know, the financial tech industry, which is obviously such a booming industry right now. But what would you say your mission is as far as what you're wanting to create and accomplish beyond generating revenue? Is it that nonprofit aspect, or is it something else? Like, what would be your mission beyond that revenue side?
Yeah, so I mean, originally this was created to make charitable giving easy for people outside to give to nonprofits, right? But play forward to me is it's ultimately a concept. It's about incorporating charitable giving into the everyday actions and everyday things that you have. And I think there's a lot more markets out there and a lot more ways that this can be done outside of, you know, the typical events and contests and things like that. And we have some of that on our mind as we prep for the future as well. To, you know, where can we incorporate charitable giving where it doesn't exist right now?
Yeah.
And that's really the concept and the mission that we want to have accomplished.
Yeah. What would you say your, having gone through this point, and actually before I start with that, can I ask, where are you years, months wise into this? Are we, when did this all start for you?
So the idea is probably 2.5 years old. Really started this about the same time last year. Okay. I took the early steps. You know, step one was telling my wife I have a idea that I want to move forward with. And
what was her reaction?
Well, if you know me, you know that I have I'm somewhat of a dreamer. I have big ambitions. I've always wanted to do things. This is not the first project that I've taken to her and said, you know, I want to see where I can go with this. It's the first thing that she'd absolutely love, though. And I can still remember we were on a trip up to the mountains, and, you know, I was like, I was nervous. It was almost like I was asking her to marry me again. You know, I had this idea that I wanted to talk to you about, Goodwill, knowing that she already knows my boyish ambition with things like this, and that it was, you know, she'll keep me in check with stuff like that. And, yeah. and she liked the idea so much that I think it was the very next week we were going out and filing business licenses and stuff like that, and creating, we originally created an LLC, now we're a C Corp, but, you know, it didn't take long. So
that is so cool. I want to talk to you about your advice to entrepreneurs, but before I ask you to answer that, just hearing you talk right there about this, I mean, you're so passionate about this idea and you're excited. Do you think that makes a difference in terms of structuring and creating something that is successful? That, I mean, there's so many people that have ideas and they don't go.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and obviously that's something that can happen sometimes, but do you think that passion, that real belief in your idea, that you can do that and that you can make it happen? Do you think that that's what sets you apart from other people that have similar ideas as far as actually following through and making and creating a successful company?
I think that, yes, 100%. If you don't fully believe in what you're doing, when you get to that first or even second roadblock that you discover, it's quitting time, right? Yeah. And there was many along the way. We have different markets that we were involved in. Like, I had to get past being a professional fundraising service. I had to get past the money transmitter licenses, you know, not to mention the funding of it and how you're going to get it built. You know, it's just every step you take, there's a new obstacle. And if you don't have that passion behind it, and if you don't fully believe in what you are doing, you're going to stop. And there's no, and which is completely understandable, right? Like, it's not an easy process to to start a company. It's just not.
So advice to future entrepreneurs or advice to 20-year-old Jeff. What would you say?
It goes along with what Mark Cuban told me on the podcast, right? Just start. If you have that belief in something, just start it and go from there. Let whatever comes, take it and then try to either learn from it or get around it or, you know, do something great with it, right? And I think that's the starting point there. I think there are a lot of people that, and I was one of those. I think I've always been somewhat of an entrepreneurial type of person. And I think back to a lot of scenarios, but I didn't have that in my life. You know, I didn't have an entrepreneur in my life. I didn't know much about being an entrepreneur. So you the first thing that comes to you is get into corporate America and work your way up, right? And outside of that, it's a frightening world because that's the safe route to go. Mm-hmm. I would tell 20-year-old Jeff to go back and try some of those ideas out that you had before and try to make something of them, because no matter what, you know, it's going to be a learning experience that you can develop from one point to, you know, that'll help you along in the future ultimately.
And what would you say to other people who are our age that are in their 30s that are like, you know, I've got this idea and I'm so passionate about it, but I don't know where to begin and maybe I'm too old for this. Who should I reach out to first when I have that breakout idea?
Yeah,
But besides your wife, of course.
Right.
You got to get the initial, you know, go ahead from her.
Right. No, that's step one. But really, reach out to anybody. Look, don't let the age thing stop you. Because I'm so glad I did. And there were points that I said, you know, this is tough. I don't know if I should keep going. But then I just start thinking about it, and it just, to me, the concept of play for just made way too much sense and needed to be in the world for me to stop. And I almost look at it as like, if I don't get this out there, you know, I'm being selfish to a degree to the world. And if you have something that you are passionate about, go for it. I'm not saying give up your job. I haven't even given up my job yet. Hopefully that's right around the corner, but.
Oh, it is. I can see it.
I mean, if you can talk to me, I mean, if you can hear it in my voice now.
So you would say, and I mean, you just mentioned this, the selfish not doing it. You would say there's a real need, a missing link for what you guys are offering in the market. There's that need for Playfora out there that's missing right now, correct?
Yeah, because the fundraising market in general has been the same. Ultimately, the reality of the donation world. It's figuring out how to get people to donate and getting people to use their birthday to, you know, to get people to donate. It's great, but all it's doing is camouflaging those types of behaviors or those kind of negative feelings. And I think there needs to be a change. And you look at Generation Z and millennials out there and they're becoming numb to this type of thing. So, you know, they much rather purchase a hat that has a piece of, you know, a portion going to charity through a cause marketing campaign than actually give up $5. And that's very understandable. And what we're doing is we're ultimately automating that for people to go out there and do that on their own.
And making it easy, it sounds like, if I do say so.
Right. You know, we talk about fantasy sports and stuff like that being a big part of the platform or being a big, you know, a market for us. But where I really see Playfora, you know, having a lot of impact is with people just, you know, doing random sweepstakes for charity. If your family has a beach house or something, then, you know, everybody that donates $10 will get a random drawing into a sweepstakes and we'll give up our beach house for, you know, a week or something like that. And it creates this charitable way of creating donations that's just non-intrusive. And that's our goal.
I'm so excited about this, Jeff. Like, I do a lot of runs and it's so awkward asking for money and for people to support you. And I love what you're saying about making this, it feels, should I say, less aggressive. It feels like maybe they can get something out of it and also feel like they're a part of it to some degree, is what it sounds like. And I'm so excited for you guys to launch and kick things off. When is the official launch date right now? What's the target?
The target was before was going to be in the middle of March for obvious reasons. We're having to delay that. We're hoping to still be launched by April. But it's funny, I tell you, like this week, I took this whole week off from my regular job, and I probably have spent already 60 hours working on Playfora. I get excited to work on it. So when I can do it guilt-free, when I'm on vacation from my other job, it's even better.
I mean, isn't that what our parents always told us growing up? If you love what you do, you're not working a day in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sad thing is I love my other job too, but.
We'll keep tag teaming both of them for now. In the meantime though, where do you see this company after this launch initially happens, come this spring? Just talking to you for a few minutes now, it does seem like, not only are you passionate about this, but you're kind of a dreamer. So I gotta ask, do you have a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan? Like what would be your ideal, this is the future picture. Can you paint that vision for me? I mean, if you're willing to spill some of these ideas.
Yeah, I'll keep some of it.
Under wraps. It, okay,
we got wraps. But I will say, and I've kind of alluded to it before though, that we're doing a lot of just generic money transfers underneath the surface. We definitely see those other markets that we're competing with now, us going a little bit more into down the road and being, a part of a maybe even a payment processor type of deal where, instead of us charging organizations to accept Playfora the generic 2.8%, can we charge them a little bit less if as long as they're incorporating a portion of that to going to a charity, right? So then and you're getting charitable giving to all kinds of different purchases and stuff like that outside of the peer group community. There's definitely other avenues that we see ourselves going down. So
yeah, totally. And when people have these ideas and they're in this stage, that alpha, beta, sort of early and middle stages, at what point would you say, hey, you got to talk to Scylla. Like they really changed the game here for me. Or what would that need be if you had a buddy that had this idea? I mean, at what point would you say, you got to use my guy. You got to use this company.
I think it's very industry specific. If it's a fintech model of any kind, definitely early, right? Yeah. If you have anything to do with any kind of payments whatsoever, if he's opening up in a construction company, that might not be a good fit. But if they're wanting to do a payment portal or something like that, that kind of stuff, the earlier the better, because they make the process so much easier. They know what they're doing.
If people want to learn more about who you are, about who Playfora is, where is the best place to send them to? Your website? Are you guys on social media?
Yeah, so we're on and every... on all the social medias, except for TikTok. I don't know much about TikTok yet, so I gotta step up my game a little bit there. Our website right now is playfora.org. So playfora.org. And that'll have any bit of information that you need and ways to reach out. And I really want people to, reach out to me, because what we're trying to establish right now is our featured listings of charities and nonprofit organizations that we want to highlight. And we already have some. And what we're looking for is a little bit of trade-off if they're willing to market us, if they have a cause that we want to put out there as well. We're really behind our current partners with United Way, Water.org, and the Innocence Project. Everything they do, we definitely support. And that's a brand for us as well. So,
Jeff, if I'm a nonprofit and I'm watwatching this right now and I'm thinking, I wonder if we might be a good fit. I'd really like to jump on this Playfora, bandwagon. Is there like a requirement or who is the best nonprofit that could really benefit from you guys? And how would I reach out to you?
Yeah, so the website's going to be the best way. You can also look me up as far as on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Everything is if you just Google Playfora or go Playfora right now, all the information will come up. But I wouldn't say that there's, you know, a standard of nonprofit. We don't necessarily want to pigeonhole ourselves with only helping the big guys too. Like, we want to help nonprofits that are smaller, that are making a unique impact on this world, and they care a lot about it. As long as your mission's good, then we're willing to work for you, with you, you know, and there is no standard of how much you're going to promote us, you know, how little. It's just, we want to, if we're promoting somebody, we want to make sure that they promote us back as well. So as long as they have the passion to do that. If there are events that you are currently a part of, if you're currently the organizer, and you think that there is an outlet to incorporating even just the smallest little bit of charitable giving into what you're doing, then we're a great fit. We're definitely going to be able to automate that process for you and make that much, much easier and add a purpose to what you're doing, because that's what it's all about. And that's our mission. We want to incorporate that charitable giving into, you know, anything that's out there. And if you already have the means and already have you're already organized in that fashion, please reach out to me and I can help you establish, you know, grow that even more.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on Alpha Beta Launch. These fintech founder stories are so important for driving success of future entrepreneurs and people that want to take their idea from conception to launch.
I really appreciate it. It has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks for listening to Alpha Beta Launch Fintech Founder Stories presented by Scylla. I'm your host, Katie Bauer. Hey, if you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to check out all our episodes. Rate, share, and subscribe to the show.